from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, in the wake of Halloween, we have river monsters and ghost ships. I'm not kidding. We also get more details on the seafood volume that crossed the docks in Southeast last year. And it's always a process to expand a harbor, isn't it? All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Three Southeast Alaska ports landed some of last year's largest volumes of seafood in the U.S., according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration report recently released. Petersburg, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Juneau were among the list of several major U.S. ports. Sitka came in with the highest numbers in Southeast, landing 89 million pounds of seafood. Ketchikan landed 84 million pounds, and Petersburg came in at 70. Juneau was included in the list but came in with 19 million pounds, slightly above the lowest volumes reported. Dutch Harbor was the highest producer for the 19th consecutive year with 787 million pounds. In terms of value, Juneau came out even compared to 2014. The other three Southeast ports took a loss of about $5 million or greater. Sitka took the biggest hit with a $12 million year-over-year loss. Alaska as a whole accounts for 62% of all seafood landed in the U.S., weighing in at 6 billion pounds. The state saw a 6% increase in volume in 2015 and a 3% increase in the value of the catch. The value of the state's catch wasn't the highest in the country, however. East Coast ports accounted for 38% of the value of seafood in the U.S., 4 percentage points higher than Alaska. It's unclear what appears in a video of something moving just under the surface of the Chena River in Fairbanks. Bureau of Land Management Public Affairs Specialist Craig McKay says he was filming pans of ice moving under the University Avenue Bridge late last month when he saw what appears to be some small pieces of ice on something undulating and lifelike in the murky water.
I wouldn't want to speculate. It was quite large. I think it was at least 12 or 15 feet long at the part I could see. So it'd be a mighty large creature. We haven't shared the video with any experts in aquatic life yet. It was a strange sight to see in the river.
McKay says he had some fun with the video, speeding it up slightly and adding eerie music, but he insists it's not photoshopped at all. A post of the video on the BLM Alaska Facebook page has generated hundreds of comments, some suggesting it shows a rope, a tarp or net, or some other inanimate object coated with debris and ice, while others speculate it's a huge pike or sturgeon, burbot, or other creature. Whatever it is, you can be sure someone is preparing a proposal for the Board of Fish to consider an open season on it. It sounds a little bit like a hoax, a ghost ship being found in the Haines Harbor on Halloween of all days, but a diver there says it's all true, and the sunken ship is right at the harbor's entrance. KHNS's Abby Collins tells us more.
I like treasure hunting.
Norm Hughes is a local fisherman and diver.
So I kind of found a ghost ship today on Halloween.
He's drying off after taking a swim near the entrance to the Portage Cove Harbor, between the fuel dock and the breakwater. His diving gear sits in the sun on the corner of the dock. Hughes was asked by the harbor master to go underwater to take a closer look at what they assumed to be a wrecked ship.
And it outlined in the map, it says wreckage. So we've been anxious to dive on it since we got this thing.
That's Assistant Harbor Master Gabe Thomas. He's talking about a sonar map that was created during studies for the Portage Cove Harbor expansion. He says they've had a hunch something was down there because of reports from tenders that come in and out of the harbor.
They were complaining when the tide was low, when they backed out, that they almost hit something. And for years, it was just everybody thought it was a high mound or a rock or mud or something.
Now they know what the culprit is, According to Hughes, while the vessel is not intact, there's still a lot down there.
It's at least 36 feet long from the end of the propeller to the bow of the boat, roughly. And it's no cabin, no deck. Looks like there's a couple of fuel tanks, a muffler maybe, and an engine and a drive shaft and a propeller sticking up.
He thinks the wreckage is pretty old.
Everything has a growth on it of 50 years or something. There's all kinds of things. It's like a marine park down there, you know, for animals.
Because of its age, Hughes says there is likely not a lot left beyond the major equipment.
I can't imagine there's any fuel down or oil down there. It's probably been down there over 50 years. There's just not much left of it to raise other than that solid engine. It's like a, you know, half the size of a pickup truck.
It's not clear when the wreck happened, but Hughes and Thomas say the profile of the ship fits stories from around 50 years ago. Here's Thomas.
From what I've talked to the old timers, they said this boat's probably from the 60s or 70s before we expanded the harbor the first time. They had a couple vessels catch on fire, and the old harbor master just grabbed them and started dragging them out. And they probably left it there thinking it was out of the way of the harbor and didn't expect us to ever, you know, grow that way.
The question of whether the debris will need to be moved is still unclear, but could be important to figure out as the harbor expansion project progresses. Thomas says the harbor master's office is talking about next steps.
Trying to figure out what the next plan of action would be. Norm thinks, if anything, we should get the engine and stuff out of the way because it is metal. And if somebody does hit it, it's going to do significant damage.
Hughes says he might go back down as they work to make sure bigger boats aren't bumping into it. He says he's not into trick-or-treating, but seeing the wreckage of the old ship was his treat this Halloween. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online anytime at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AKTeach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AKTeach or at 907-942-0667.
Petersburg Borough Assembly late last month voted to move forward with a dredging study for one of the city's local boat harbors. The borough will sign an agreement with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to investigate the need for dredging and whether it makes sense for that federal agency to become a long-term partner in maintaining South Harbor. KFSK's Joe Vicknicki tells us more.
Petersburg's South Harbor has a problem with inaccessibility because of shallow water, especially at low tide and for the larger boats that tie up there. Officials think the problem might be getting worse because of sedimentation from several nearby creeks, along with rebound of the Earth's crust following the most recent glaciation. The Army Corps wants to study the problem and determine if there's a federal interest in maintaining access into that harbor for the long term. Petersburg Harbor Master Glorianne Wallen explained that signing the agreement with the Corps was necessary.
Once they take it on and realize that there is actually a federal responsibility here, then they kind of embrace the whole thing. They embrace the whole harbor. So in 20, 30 years down the line when we have to do the southern end that was dredged 15 years ago, they're going to pick up their share of it.
The Corps will pay for the first $100,000 of the study, and then the remaining amount would be split between the Corps and the borough, up to $325,000 for each. The Assembly in August approved spending that much out of harbor reserves for that investigation. Wolin pointed out that the research could lead to identification of another harbor.
They also realized that Petersburg is beginning to max our capacity, and they feel that what could come out of this study is also probably rationale for another harbor basin somewhere along the waterfront that they would go and identify, put in on behalf of us, similar to our situation in the North Harbor, and then they're on the hook for forever to take care of it. So, you know, I think it's a wonderful opportunity that wasn't there very many years ago. We've worked a long time to get to this point. with our delegation in D.C., the entire state.
The Corps paid $3.5 million to dredge Petersburg's North Harbor back in 2013 and clearing the way for a new float system there. It's estimated that the sand and mud that needs to be removed in South Harbor could be double the amount of North Harbor. An early cost estimate is around $5 million, although the study would provide more cost information, and dredging could happen by 2019. Assembly members questioned whether Petersburg could be on the hook for more than the $325,000 for the feasibility study. Wolin responded that either side could back away from the agreement at any point. The vote was 5-0 to authorize the borough manager to sign the agreement with the Corps, and Cindy Lagadakis and Eric Castro were not at the meeting. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Fishing vessel ran aground last week in Sitka Sound, leaking some oil. Coast Guard received a call last Wednesday evening from Jesse Jeske, owner and operator of the 41-foot Sandra L. He had hit bottom in a tidal area near the mouth of Redoubt Bay and was taking on water. A Jayhawk helicopter from Air Station Sitka was out on a training mission at the time of the call. The crew was diverted to the scene of the grounding, where a rescue swimmer was lowered to assist. The fishing vessel Laura Lydell was also nearby and had deployed its inflatable raft. Jeske was safely rescued and brought aboard the Good Samaritan vessel. According to a Coast Guard press release, a flyover on Friday showed a visible oil sheen around the wreck. Jay Willman supervises the Coast Guard's Marine Safety Detachment in Sitka. In the case of an oil spill, it's the owner who's responsible for cleanup efforts. Jeske has contracted an oil spill response organization to help with cleanup, and Willman says Jeske has a good network of responders.
Between divers and other commercial fishing vessels, they're coming together to effectively salvage the boat.
An absorbent boom was placed around the vessel, and divers have been deployed to isolate fuel tanks. Willman says it's impossible to know how much oil may have been spilled so far.
It was reported that there was 50 gallons of diesel fuel on board at the time of the incident. But until the vessel is salvaged, we won't know how much remains on board.
The Coast Guard oversaw efforts and has opened the Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund, a $1 billion federal fund, to help pay for cleanup and spill-related damages. Willman says a handful of similar spills happen around Sitka each year. The exact cause of this incident is unknown, and an investigation is ongoing.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUAC's Dan Bross in Fairbanks, KHNS's Abby Collins in Haines, KFSK's Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, KCAW's Emily Russell in Sitka, and KRBD's Aaron Bolton in Ketchikan. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.